Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble! Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Crown Me Now podcast. Today we have joined us a very, very special friend of mine. He's a juggernaut of an attorney, serial entrepreneur, attorney Skinner Lewis from the Lewis Law Firm. Take your notes, get your pens out because you'll be getting a lot of nuggets today. So here we are, attorney Skinner, the man himself. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Man, I know it took a lot to carve out some time for me out of your busy schedule, but I really appreciate you coming on today.
You know, I always got time for you, brother. When you call, I'm coming. So All right. No problem. I always got time for you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. So, multi-million dollar law firm, a recognizable face in the community. I'm just curious, how and why being an attorney?
Man, I always share this story about me being a young kid, kind of coming up tough, right? Coming from the community that I came from. And I was sitting in school suspension.
Yeah.
And they used to bring people to talk to us, you know, like scared straight.
Yeah.
To make sure you don't get in trouble. And one time I was sitting in there and this guy pulls up in a nice Porsche. He comes in, nice tailor suit, nice Italian type of attorney. And I asked him, I said, what do you do? And he says, I'm a lawyer. I said, no. The lawyers I see on TV, man, they don't look as cool as you. Their suits are not that good.
Yeah.
Had the nice Cuban on and everything like that. And, you know, coming from where we come from,
yeah,
we gravitate towards nice things.
Absolutely.
So he said a comment that changed my whole outlook on life. He says, when you're good at what you do what you want. So entrepreneurship has always been about freedom for me.
Mm.
You know, I'm only interested in things that helps me grow and expand. I stay away from things that contract me or restrict me. So when I looked at everything, an attorney's always involved.
Yes.
There's not a thing facts, you can always do that an attorney's not involved. So I figured, what can I do that would put me in enough rooms so I can grow and kind of soak everything like a sponge and start taking more opportunities from there? And that's why I chose an attorney, man. I said, no matter where you go, you need a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Why not learn how to be an attorney myself and then take those skill sets and apply them to different opportunities? So
okay,
that's why I chose an attorney, brother.
All right.
And so, when you're good at what you do what you want. You can look good at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's peel it back one more layer. So, I mean, you said opportunities. Give us your background.
Okay. So I'm of Haitian descent. I'm actually the first American-born Haitian in my entire family.
Yeah.
All my siblings were born in Haiti.
Yeah.
So I was born in 1983. So when we first came over, my parents was part of that, all the Haitians that left Haiti and got on the boats and came to South Florida.
Yeah.
So my mom was in Chrome. So that's where they put them when they originally came. And George Bush and was the president at the time.
Sorry, Chrome is like a... not a detention center, but it's kind of like a holding facility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like a detention center when they don't know what to do with you because you came here illegally.
Yeah.
So they have to process you then.
Okay.
And I believe in the 80s, it's probably Reagan was still president at the time. George mm-hmm. Bush might have been his vice president. And that's why a lot of Haitians back then, they were very pro-Republican because that's who allowed them to come in.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
And a lot of people have to understand your politics is what helps you. And sometimes if you're struggling, this is the person that helps you. That's your politics. Right?
Exactly.
So my mom came over on a boat. My dad was already here. He had already came here. And George Bush allowed everyone, they pushed for it to allow the Haitians to stay.
Mm.
So if you made it here from Haiti during the 80s, there was a system that you can actually become a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
My parents went from Miami. We moved to Lake Worth, Florida. And I didn't know the difference between being Haitian or Black American or none of that kind of stuff. But us coming up, because there was such an influx of Haitians, we kind of changed the demographics of South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So back then there was just a lot of issues as far as being Haitian, you know, not speaking the language, not being cool, not knowing what's going on. And now you're in a new land and you're figuring your way through all of it, right? So for me, I came up in Boynton Beach. My parents moved to Boynton Beach. And while I was in Boynton Beach, that's when I was able to kind of learn how to navigate being brought in the community, that I'm the newcomer in the community. We're not as welcome when we first come. There's a lot of friction. And now I'm learning as I'm getting older, the frictions, because the Haitians are taking the jobs, right? They're willing to accept less money to take the jobs. That's creating stress at home for the Black Americans that are there. So I came up in a time when it wasn't cool to be Haitian. We got picked on, so got bullied, got in fights, things got very serious, but it actually became an advantage because we came tight and we created our own community from that standpoint. So for me, I've always been very street-minded because I've gravitated towards entrepreneurship. And when I didn't have any other way to do it, we did it like we knew how to do in Jamaica or Haiti. You're going to go sell whatever you can.
Yes.
So I always had the hustler's mentality. Gotcha. Put something in my hand, I'm going to sell it. I'm going to move it. I'm going to market it. And that was how it was. That's how I kind of came up as a kid.
So do you think being Haitian, do you think being raised in an immigrant household gave you an advantage?
I didn't see it at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't see it at the time, but I would say for sure now, having a sense of community through culture, it does create an advantage. And so for me right now, it's kind of making me understand how when you have a shared language and a shared culture, it's easy to click.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to come together because we have an understanding without me having to say anything.
Yeah. And I feel like today, when you speak about community, the dynamic of community has changed. I feel like in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, you had a community where people actually helped each other with their resources, whether it's time, money, our knowledge, but no, it's a little bit different. It's almost like fend for yourself and the community is significantly smaller. Do you think that has impacted entrepreneurship positively or negatively?
So to me, entrepreneurship is like a tool. It's like a hammer, right? If you know how to use a hammer for the right job, the hammer is going to come into use. If you use a hammer for the wrong job, you're just breaking things.
Yeah.
So a lot of us have entrepreneur spirit, but to me, what we can do together is always way more important than what I can do by myself.
That's true.
So I use entrepreneurship to make sure I put everybody around me on with knowledge, right? Yeah. So from a maybe from a global standpoint, from a bigger standpoint, people come at it as a selfish, I want to be number one, I want to be on top. But I always look at it as if we operate as a group, and we dominate the market, there is no competition.
100%.
Versus if I dominate the market, just me, you get me out of the way, that's not sustainable, right? There's no legacy in that.
Exactly.
So the path that I choose to take is a little harder, right? Yeah. Because we're not all at the same mental capacity. But it's like the African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Yeah. And I want to go far.
Yeah.
So I would rather my entrepreneurship maybe for my season that we teach everyone around us how to work together.
Yeah.
So for the legacy behind us, they learn how to grow together.
Yeah.
So I'm just being very realistic on what it's going to take to get there. But I'm also seeing through social media and people seeing different experiences, people are starting to kind of think outside the box and starting to value themselves even more so.
Very true.
So I believe in entrepreneurship in a way of, as a group, we're capitalists.
Yeah.
But in the group, we're socialists.
I've never heard that. That's a good one.
That's how I operate.
That's a good one.
Right?
Yeah.
It's my group versus other groups.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell you, it goes back to the street mentality. This is our block. This is our street.
Yes.
Yeah. We control our block. We control our street. We don't worry about what's going on in other streets. When it comes to our street, though, everybody's connected. Everyone's working together. So it's my same mindset. It's us versus whoever's not with us.
Yeah.
So that changes my entrepreneurship, right? If I'm the one that's winning and I have the money, then I put up the money, but someone may have the knowledge.
Yeah.
They put up the knowledge.
Yeah.
That makes us partners.
Yes.
I don't make money be the top thing. And I think that's where you're starting to see the disconnect.
Yeah.
Where people that come into new money believe money is more valuable than the knowledge.
Exactly.
Or being united. That is the true value. The loyalty is the true value. The money is the byproduct.
Sure. And I mean, even to add that, money is not valuable without people.
Correct.
If you don't have people, money is definitely not as valuable.
Correct.
Yeah. One thing I have to say about you, Skinner, is that right now, as you sit here, you're talking about community, you're talking about putting people on and legacy. And I mean, that's one thing I have to say, man, I respect and rate about you, because from the first day you and I met, I met you through the gram, you know, just that mutual respect. Then we saw each other at the Magic game. Then we finally had coffee.
Right.
Well, actually the drinks.
Yeah,
the drinks. And immediately you were just sharing knowledge. And sometimes that's different even as attorneys that look like each other.
Correct.
You didn't see it as competition. You're seeing it as, I have this knowledge. Let me share that with you.
Right.
And I mean, immediately from you said it, the next time I saw you, boom, I was like, yo, whatever you said, I did it.
And that's why I knew, I said, Sekou, this is my brother.
Yes.
And the thing about it, Sekou, is when you have core values, mm-hmm. you're able to know who you rock with very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's a difference between meeting you one night and saying, this is my brother for life.
Yeah.
Versus I need to be with you for 20 years, but we never share core values.
Yeah.
It's a different value.
Yeah.
100%. So the moment that we're exchanging game.
Yeah.
And we're saying, how can we become better?
Yeah.
And then we actually go test it and execute it and mm-hmm. bring feedback to each other. That's the type of relationship, partnership mm-hmm. that it's almost unnatural at that point, because it's just like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I go off vibes. I go off, is this a long-term situation that we can both benefit from?
Yeah.
Not looking at what can we get from each other today.
Exactly.
A better Sekou is a better me.
100%.
That's how I look
exactly.
at it.
Exactly, yeah.
So if I call you my brother and I really want you to win, there is no competition, because when you get better, I get better. You're going to force me to get better.
Facts.
So why wouldn't I want to share everything I can so you can take it to another level? And then now you come back, hey, Skinner, have you tried this?
Yeah.
The next time we're talking about cases and some medical strategies.
Yeah.
And you're like, Skinner, this is what I'm doing. I'm like, bro, this is good. Right?
Yeah.
And if I didn't open myself up to you that way, then we would have been in a situation where it's like guarding information. Yeah. And I think you just got to have an abundant mindset where share the information. Have no expectation, but be prepared for the opportunities that come from it.
Facts.
Yeah.
Facts. And they're not even sharing information, but you also shared your network. I shared my network.
Of course.
I remember in that first meeting, we were talking about a medical malpractice case, and you're like, Sekou, you're working that case yourself?
Yes.
Are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm working it myself. And you're like, yo, what are you doing? You know? And you showed me the playbook.
Right.
You showed me the network as to, hey, for this level of a case, you need to have this network.
Correct.
So a lot of times I see people come, they may share information, but they won't share their contacts.
Correct.
As if you're just going to steal them.
Correct.
But you are right away transparent in, if you grow, I grow, and we grow together. And that's so missing, especially for minorities, people of color, men, immigrants.
Yes.
The whole, let's hold one back instead of each one reach one, each one teach one.
Correct.
And that's it's crazy how it's undervalued in today's world. Previously you said core values.
Yeah.
If you were to say, what are some core values that when you see another entrepreneur, another attorney, another business owner, you can have an idea of what their success would be? What would those core values be that you can pinpoint that right away? Give me three.
So I go for the three H's. Are they humble?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, are they coachable?
Mm-hmm.
Are they willing to learn? Are they honest? Meaning that, are they truthful? Do they have integrity?
Yeah.
And then, are they hungry? Do they have capacity? Right? So my three H's is the things that I look at, because if you got someone that is hungry, but they're not honest, they'll do anything to get there, but they're not going to keep it.
Yeah.
You got someone that's humble, but they're not hungry. They live a small life, and they actually believe me being humble is a great thing.
Yeah.
So the humility comes from the fact of having power and not using it.
Yes.
The humility doesn't come from not having power.
Yes.
So some people are forced to be humble.
Yeah.
Because you don't have power.
Yeah.
The humility is having the actual power and being very very conscientious in how you wield it, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people walk around and say they're humble, but no, you're humble because you haven't really forced yourself to really push yourself to have to do something that's going to make you powerful.
True.
So once you have the power, then you truly see the humility. So for me, I look at humility. I look at, are you humble, hungry, mm-hmm. and honest? I like extreme ownership.
Yeah.
Extreme ownership for me means that if you say you're going to do it, I don't have to go ever look back to say, oh, are you going to do it or not?
Yeah.
Right? Because we're operating at a very fast pace mm-hmm. to be able to compete. If I have to look back, I can't go forward.
That's true.
So if you delegate it to somebody else, you better check in because you're the one that said that you could do it.
Do it. Yeah.
You take extreme ownership.
I like that.
That's another thing for me. And then loyalty and trust is very big for me. Loyalty from the standpoint, I always tell people there's a difference between loyalty and dependability. People mm-hmm. kind of mix those two together. Loyalty is looking out for the other person's best interests.
Mm.
Dependability is showing up.
Yeah.
So you have some people that are loyal, but they're not dependable. What that means is if they get there, you don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
But while they get there, you don't know. You're looking at your clock. I hope he shows up.
Yes.
You have some people that are dependable, mm-hmm. but they're not loyal.
Yeah.
They're always by your side. They always show up, but they're not there for your interest. They're there for their own interest.
Yeah.
So I really look at that. If we're really looking out for each other's best interests, mm-hmm. we don't have to worry about anything because we both want each other to win.
Yeah.
And that's what creates a win-win situation for me. And then I would say one thing, the last thing I would add is I like people that aren't codependent, but interdependent.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is we're both independent. We both dominate our lanes. We come together to dominate more together.
Yes.
Because if I'm independent and you're dependent, the value isn't the same. I feel like I want to go, but I feel like I got to carry you.
Yeah.
If we're both dependent, we just stuck together, but we don't have no leadership.
Yeah.
And if we're both independent, but we don't know how to work together, we cannot take it to another level.
And that's going to go over a lot of people's heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. Yeah, so you might have to hit the replay button on that one because this is some deep nuggets,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
No, but it's facts. You know, it's, and a lot of times people, even people with talent,
yeah,
people who are humble, people who have all three H's, they don't go forward because their partner is too much dependable.
Correct.
You know, then they're carrying baggage.
Correct.
And then they're carrying not just the actual baggage, but a baggage mindset.
Yes.
And that person will never realize their full potential.
Correct.
Just because of the person that they rely on as a partner.
Correct. And to talk to a little bit more into that, Sekou, I think a lot of young entrepreneurs deal with this. You have to get to the point where you understand it's not your task to take on other people's responsibility.
Mm.
And that was a major mind shift for me to kind of shift my mind, because when you become a leader, you start thinking you have to save everyone.
Yeah.
But truly, if you had to struggle, Sekou, to get to where you are and you don't allow them to struggle, you're not letting them go through the same journey that you went through that made you the way that you are,
mm-hmm.
that put you where you are and gave you the mindset where you are. So now you put them in a position where they weren't able to really go through it, but they're not ready for the position.
Yeah.
So the struggle is the journey.
The struggle is the journey. Yeah.
So it's not our job to remove struggle from people. Mm-mm. It's our job to show them how to get through the struggle.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I can easily say that, and I'm sure you share the same sentiment. All of our lessons came from the struggle.
Correct.
And even with the levels that we're at right now, it's appreciated because we know what the struggle looked like.
Correct.
And a lot of times people, they get to a certain level and they start to operate different and they completely forgot about the struggle that they went through.
Correct.
The people that they struggled with and the lessons that they learned from that struggle. But now they're trying to go with new rules. But then a whole different type of struggle is now ahead.
Exactly.
You know? No, that's deep. I like that. I like that. So, the Lewis Law Firm, where is it now and where do you, what's your vision for the Lewis Law Firm?
So, the vision and where the Lewis Law Firm is, it started as a two-man team. Me and my good friend started the law firm originally out of law school.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is what I said. Sometimes early success is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have understanding, you may waste it, right? So I was very successful very early on. I got a major client, made a lot of money, but I just kept bringing more people into the firm. They can grow.
Yeah.
Not understanding that everything has to be able to stand on its own and the value has to be there in order to scale, right? Yeah. The biggest mistake you can do is grow, but you're not making more money.
Because that's
all you're doing is raising your costs, right?
Sure.
So we lost a major client. Everyone had to kind of figure out what they're going to do. I said, I'm not going back to work. I'm never going to work for nobody. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted my freedom. So I stayed out and I rebuilt the firm from there. And excuse me. Where we are now for me is we're in a good place. We're like a good middle market law firm, right? Mm-hmm. We have good clientele, good referrals. Cases are coming in. My name is well known.
What are your practice areas?
So I practice personal injury and first party insurance claims. So anything that's dealing with homeowners, claims being denied. I represent doctors if they're PIP suits. Mm-hmm. So if they're not getting paid their medical benefits.
Yeah.
And then I do regular personal injury, wrongful death, car accidents, medical malpractice.
Gotcha.
Is my main areas. So now where we are, I want to grow by helping other attorneys. And I'm really focusing on the marketing and the sales, which is what we talk about a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we take what works already? Mm-hmm. And now connect it to other attorneys that share our core values that we know when we send work and we grow the firm that we don't have to worry about it because everybody's hungry.
Yeah.
Everybody's humble.
Yes.
Everybody's honest.
Yeah.
And we're ready to just grow together. So I'm really recruiting like you and I working together and bringing in other attorneys into our group.
Yeah.
How do we come together, even though we have these individual brands, almost become like the Avengers?
Yeah, I love it.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're Iron Man. Right? Yes. I'm Captain America. Exactly. I have my own thing.
Yeah.
But some problems, we have to come together to attack them, right?
I love that. I love it.
So no one feels like I lose my identity. You keep your identity, but we have a joint identity when we come together because we can do more.
Mm-hmm.
So finding like-minded individuals that want to be part of that. Yeah. Is my main goal. And I'm always a guy that I do it first before I tell anybody else. I spend my money first.
Yeah.
I test it out first. I take all the risks. Mm-hmm. And then if it works, I like to bring it to you. Now let's try to make it even bigger.
Okay. Wow.
So that's the next phase. The next phase is really growing through partnerships.
Yeah.
Is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of law firms or business owners, they go through similar phases, right? It's boom, you have the start.
Yes.
Right? That's between year one to year three. That's where you're taking on a lot of costs, a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
Your first set of staff. Boom, you have your first break. Then you move on to the next phase where you're starting to say, okay, let's go heavy in marketing, advertisers, and really trying to grow. So it's like the growth phase.
Mm-hmm.
Then I feel like the next level up is when you've realized that you have maximized how far you can grow on your own. That's when you start looking out credible and influential partnerships.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. But somewhere in that chain, there's always a defining moment that it's a barrier that you had to overcome, right? It was a make or break moment.
Yes.
Was that losing the client for you, or what was your make or break moment for you that after you overcame it, then you went to the next level?
You know what's crazy? I think you've been practicing, what, 5-6 years now?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's crazy is every season you feel like it's a make or break moment.
Exactly.
It never stops. That's the first secret.
Yeah.
There's no level that you get to that there's no more problems.
Yeah.
It's just new problems.
It's just new problems.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's say when you were small, you were able to control all the checks going out of your office because you're the only guy there.
Yeah.
Now you got 15 people working for you. You don't know what's going on with the checks. Hey, they're going all over the place, right?
Man, I know some attorneys hearing that and their hearts skip a beat.
That's what I'm saying. So what it is as you grow, you must grow also mentally.
Yes.
Yeah. You cannot be the solo lawyer with a bigger practice because you're just making it a bigger solo law firm, right? You got to become the attorney that has as big as the practice. So you got to really upgrade your mindset.
Yeah.
And for myself, my biggest thing is shedding because I'm so loyal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like feeling like I'm shedding relationships when I see that I'm growing and people are not growing with me, mm-hmm. and you know, it's like I needed therapy for that type of thing. I feel like I'm leaving people behind.
Yeah.
But what I'm realizing is it's our own personal mission to grow as individuals. And as you grow, you're going to seek people that's ahead of you.
Facts.
Right? Mm-hmm. So some of the meetings I used to go to in the past, I can't go there no more because I've outgrown that meeting.
Yeah.
I can't really talk to somebody how to get six figures.
No. Yeah.
Right? I could talk to you about how do you get your seven figures, how do you go to eight? Mm-hmm. Because I'm going through that journey. I'm learning.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for nine figures now.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to people that's like, how do you scale?
Yeah.
How do you do mergers and acquisitions? Mm-hmm. How do you buy out old competition? All different mindset conversations. Like, are you building something based on where you are, or are you building something based on where you need to be? So you got to give yourself space to grow. It's like having a shell. Mm-hmm. If you're a crab, you can't grow if the shell's too small,
right?
Exactly. So for me, my challenge is mindset growth. Mm-hmm. To be able to think and see and have the vision of how do we become a billion-dollar law firm.
And how do you tap into that? Like, what tools are you seeking to say, okay, I'm going to tap into that nine-figure law firm growth?
That mindset is you have to invest in coaching. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know this. You have to invest in people that have already done it. Mm-hmm. Like people say, I like people that are result driven.
Yeah.
Meaning my results speak for me, not what I think. I'm not a consultant. I actually did it.
Yes. Yes.
Those individuals are so busy, Sekou, that you got to put yourself in a position where they are. So you have to spend the money to be around them.
Yeah.
Right? I like to go into programs, coaching programs, mastermind programs, where individuals are already there and they've done it. Mm-hmm. And I can have a close proximity relationship with them where I can really have a very close conversation to say, this is where I'm at. These are the issues I'm dealing with. How did you deal with those issues when you were there? For yourself and me, we tend to always be the most successful people in a lot of the rooms that we go in.
Yeah.
So for me now, I want to be in rooms where people are 10 times more successful than me.
Yeah.
Right? When they say I want to make $100 million, they laugh. What's 100 million?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the kind of growth that I want, right? So I'm doing that by joining a lot of mastermind groups, traveling throughout the nation. Mm-hmm. If somebody that I want to meet with says fly to New York, I'm flying to New York.
Yeah.
Right. If they say you gotta come to Phoenix, I'm coming to Phoenix. You gotta go to Vegas. So I'm automating my law firm. So I'm no longer self-employed, but someone that owns a business. Mm-hmm. The business should be able to run on its own whether I'm there or not.
True.
So I'm removing myself as much as I can from those day-to-day activities so I can focus on the growth opportunities.
Yeah, and I mean, just to jump in on that point, I remember in one of our first conversations, you said to me, Sekou, you really have to look at how much you're working in the law firm versus on the law firm.
Correct.
And I mean, when you said that, even though I preached that to other people, it was so profound, you know, and it hit me. It's like, damn, I'm spending so much time within the law firm, which is good, but I never really took the time out to unequivocally say, all right, what is the value of my time?
Correct.
And should I be spending time going to make a copy?
Yes.
Right? Or should I be spending time, you know, with a client that unfortunately I can have another attorney in the firm speak to. So, and I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs, attorneys, they have that struggle where they don't know the value of their time. I mean, I know attorneys who their firms are doing extremely well, but they're still spending 2 hours in consultations for free.
Correct.
You know, so a lot of entrepreneurs, I feel they miss that step with actually knowing how to distinguish working in their business versus on their business.
Yeah, what happens is when you're an entrepreneur, you're a control freak.
Yeah.
You're not an entrepreneur without wanting everything to be perfect.
Yeah.
And what you start telling yourself is, I'm perfect because I built it, so I need to do everything. Mm-hmm. But the idea is you cannot scale yourself. You cannot be everywhere.
Yeah.
So the mindset is this. If I fly into Dallas, I meet with an attorney and he says, Skinner, I want to partner with each other. Let's open an office in Dallas. The clientele's here. We can market. That may be a $1 million transaction that I did in 1 hour.
Yeah.
versus me sitting in my office doing a consultation when I have capable staff that can do it. And now I'm working on a $10,000 matter. Once my time becomes valuable, when I say I actually bring value to my firm by flying around the nation and striking deals and partnering with other attorneys versus me sitting in my cubicle and drafting documents, it benefits the entire ecosystem at that point because everyone's doing their highest and best use. My paralegal's highest and best use is bringing amazing value that I can trust so I can go ahead and elevate to the next level. You bring in an attorney, that attorney should be able to replace you to the point where you can elevate to your next level. If you go look at all the biggest firms, the faced attorney is not doing, they're not in the trenches.
They're no longer in the trenches.
They're more in a strategic level now, So there's a difference of being the person that executes on the daily and being the strategic person that can help the actual firm grow. So for me, I look at it based on the quadrants, right? When you work for somebody, you're an employee, you leave, you start your own business. Now you're self-employed. Most people are self-employed. If you look at the Florida Bar News, 67% of firms are solos. That means the 67% of firms that are solos, the other mid-sized to large firms, they probably dominate 80% of the market. That means the solos are fighting for the 20% remaining. Right? Because they haven't aggregated all their opportunities and centralized what they can do. So for me, I don't want to be self-employed. I might as well work for someone else, even though I'm working for my business at that point. My business owns me. After you pass self-employment, you get to being a business. And being a business means that you should be able to go on vacation, Sekou. And nothing changes. If the business is dependent on you, you're not a business. You're someone that made a lot of money, that employed a lot of people. You're more like a cartel. You're not a business, right? The idea is put things in the business, invest in the business that it can be automated on its own, and you just bring the vision to the business. That's what's working on the business. The business becomes your baby. Now you come to the office, say, cool, you're not even talking about files because the files are so well managed from what you've already established. Now you're saying, guys, can we do the files even faster? Guys, can we audit the files? Guys, what are we doing to market and grow the law firm? You're working on business strategies, not in the firm itself. So after you have the business, the last one I say is investor. When you have a good business that is producing money for you, you as an individual now have money to invest into other opportunities. And my goal was to get to investor mode where I can look at different businesses, see the opportunities, and let my money work for me. So I'm no longer the one doing the work.
And that's and that goes back to what you said about legacy. That is building a legacy. All right. So one question that I know I get a lot, but just in different ways, is if you were to identify what jumps you from six figures to seven figures as a business or as an attorney, what would you say is like the key elements? I'm asking for three.
You know what's crazy? If you work your ass off, you're going to get to a million. That's the sad thing about it. Because you start thinking that's the way to do it. So what that means is through sheer will, if you show up every day and you're consistent and you give good service, you're going to get to seven figures. The people that are not at seven figures, they're probably not consistent. Because the margins are there in the business to do that, right? So that means the first thing I say, if you're at six figures and you're not at seven, have you knocked on every door and not given up and taken every opportunity? That's the first question. Once you get to seven figures, to get to the eight, have you made enough people around you rich? Have you paid enough employees? Have you spent enough in the economy? When we're marketing, we're spending money in the economy. And that's how this game is set up. If you keep the money to yourself, you're going to stay small.
Preach.
Like what you're doing with this podcast. You're reinvesting your money into someone else that's giving us the production value so you can tell your story. If you said, I made $1 million, I'm going to keep it in the bank, I come home every day, I sit down, you're going to be in that position for the rest of your life.
Correct.
Because you're not circulating the wealth.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So to go from 7 to 8 figures is how many six-figure people are you making in your own business?
Yep.
Right? Jeff Bezos said it the best. They said I made $200 billion, but how many billionaires did I make? How many millionaires did I make from my vision?
Yeah.
That's the only reason I'm $200 billion. Because I got people around me that made billions. I got people that made 100 millions. I got people that make millions.
Yeah.
Just by being around me.
Yeah.
So when your vision becomes that big, it's not just about me. You start figuring to go to every next level, how much am I giving back? What's in it for everyone that's around me?
Wow.
It's a mind shift.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a whole mind shift.
100,000 is all about me, 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 me.
Yeah.
I need to get the 100,000. 1 million, you're still kind of me, but you got a team. You got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Once you say 8 figures, how does my firm administrator be able to go to whatever school she wants, pay for her kids to go to college, get health insurance, all these different things that brings value to her that makes her the best administrator for my firm to take it to the next level?
Well said. And people overlook that. And I see a lot of business owners do it in, they're so focused on keeping costs low.
Correct.
Cutting costs that, hey, you know, they're going to keep the employees at, $30,000 a year, $35,000 a year, but then expect these same employees to give them six-figure results.
Correct.
Or they're spending $0 on marketing.
Correct.
Or they complain about spending $500 on Google AdWords.
Correct.
But you have these lofty goals. If you don't spend and elevate everybody, every system internally, how are you going to grow?
Correct.
The money's going to stay in the bank and lose value.
Correct.
Or you're going to stay at the same position without any type of growth.
See, people think time in is value. That's not the value.
Mm-hmm.
Contribution is the value.
Yeah.
If you spent 10 years and you didn't contribute to something, you're in the same place you started 10 years from now.
Yeah.
You spend 1 year and you contribute everything you can, you could be 10 decades ahead.
Yeah.
And wow. That's what people don't think.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think, how much have I contributed for what I want? So when I say I want a $1 billion law firm, how much must I contribute to do that? Because that's what comes with it.
Yeah.
Right? We can't have a lofty goal without understanding how big we need to become.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's where there's always a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
You want this, but you're not willing to grow to become that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I am with it now. My thing is, 6 figures was just working hard.
Yeah.
7 figures was kind of building a team. And 8 figures is just getting better.
Yeah.
Right? Growing, expanding, getting better, bringing in better people that bring more value.
Yeah.
So what that means is, like you said, you can have a $30,000 employee that didn't bring no value. You bring in a $60,000 employee that could change the game for you.
Completely.
And all you did was you went up $30,000, but you could have got $1 million of value.
Yeah.
Because the mindset's different.
Yep. Or you provide that $30,000 employee with $30,000 worth of education.
Correct.
That employee will bring to your business.
Correct. So you always want to invest in those around you as long as they have the capacity is the goal.
Yeah. I wanted to shift to branding. Mm-hmm. How important do you see branding, and what is your definition of branding?
To me, branding is everything. Branding is what is said about you in the room when you're not there.
Ooh.
That's what branding is.
Yeah.
It's not what's said in front of you, because everyone can be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Branding is, does your name stand strong when you're not the one pushing it, right? So for me, branding comes from the work that we do, right? It all has to be congruent. Because if I say we want to be a $1 billion law firm, that means we're giving an exceptional service. So then our service has to match the brand and our integrity and our words and our core values. Everything must be aligned, right? Now, marketing and branding is the difference of how do I want to get my message out?
Yes.
Right? So for me, my brand is what I've always known. Just be authentic. You have to accept Skinner. A lot of people don't like me. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Some people don't like Louis Vuitton. Some people like Chanel. Some people like to buy their shoes from Target.
Yeah.
Those are the brands that they like.
Yeah.
It doesn't make that brand any less valuable. Exactly. When they're all making money.
Exactly.
So my brand is not for everyone.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you have to accept.
Yeah.
Your brand is for your tribe And when you find people in your tribe, it should be easy to do business.
Yes.
If it's hard, that's not your tribe.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I look for. Mm-hmm. So I want clients that believe and think how I think. It should be easy. Mm-hmm. They trust what I'm telling them. They respect what we're doing. We're growing together. Same thing with my partners. So that's my brand. If we're alike, we share core values, this is going to be an easy transaction for us.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're not in a difficult time.
Correct.
But the way that we address it is going to be easy. It's going to be an easy relationship for us to deal with that difficult time.
Yeah.
That's what brand means to me.
Yeah.
So when I think about someone's brand, like even you, when I think about Sekou, when I hear your name, there's an image that comes in my mind.
Yeah.
That's your brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, everyone has a brand.
Yep. Whether you like it or not.
And
you said something very profound. I mean, not everybody will like your brand.
Correct.
And it even cycles back to a previous point that you made is not everybody will be your friend. And
correct.
If you try to be friends with everybody,
correct,
that means you're actually not being true to yourself and not being a friend or loyal to yourself.
Correct.
Which I think a lot of people miss that mark in that they want everybody to like me.
See, they're confusing respect and decency with friendship.
Yes.
Friendship means we share something in common. I want to build trust, loyalty, and rapport with you. Mm-hmm. You don't want friendship with everyone.
Yeah.
Because y'all don't all share the same core values.
Yeah.
So the difference is I don't have to be your friend, but I can respect and treat you decent as a person.
Yeah.
So that's really the mindset. But people take that, oh, for me to be able to communicate with you, I must be your friend.
Yeah.
So when you change the mindset and understanding that be yourself, be authentic, and you're going to get the right people around you, that's really what I believe branding is building a tribe from that.
Yeah. So when you started your business, did you automatically decide what your brand is going to be? Or is it something that grew over time or kind of morphed itself?
It was automatic for me because my brand has always been tell my story. Mm. Those that like it will gravitate towards it. Before, like you did a track, you was an athlete.
Yeah.
Me, I was into music. I wanted to be a rapper.
Nice.
I needed to be the next biggest rapper, right? So for me, I understood branding from the beginning of I'm only going to have certain amount of fans no matter what I do.
Yeah.
The biggest artist in the world doesn't have all the world as their fans.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
Yet they're extremely wealthy and doing extremely well for themselves. So my thing was tell your story. Don't sugarcoat it. Don't be ashamed of it. Walk in your truth. Don't be small. And what's for you is for you. And do I have a lot of learning to do? I will always have a lot of learning to do.
Yeah.
But as long as I'm staying true to myself, I always win.
True.
The worst thing is for me to win a race and I'm not even true to myself anymore. That's not a race I want to run in.
Yeah.
So I just think for me, my brand is if you're a real person, I like to see people where they're at. I know everyone is suffering. Everyone's dealing with their own struggle. And no matter how successful we are, that doesn't mean that the pain goes away, that the struggles go away.
Yeah.
So I'm always prepared and humble enough to know that there will always be another challenge no matter how I'm doing in life.
Correct.
And that took a lot of growth. I would say this, I'm more mature now than I used to be.
Yeah.
So I've always been intelligent, but maturity matters what you do with that intelligence.
Correct.
That's what I would say. I'm more mature now. So yes, I'm okay to say some things you did in the past, Skinner, probably wasn't the best move for you to do. Mm-hmm. But the old me would say, no, I had to do it.
Yeah.
Right? No accountability. I'm taking accountability now.
Yeah.
Is what I would say. I'm more mature to take accountability and to look at, okay, even if that was good, could it have been better? Mm-hmm. And wanting to do that 1% of getting better every day just to see who I can be at the end of the journey. So that's what my brand now went from being keeping it real, I came from this environment, to I came from this environment, but I expect more from this environment now.
Yeah. So let's touch a little bit about the environment that you came from, because I feel like a lot of people out there today, they feel limited. They say, all right, you know, this is where I came from. This is the max that I can achieve.
Yes.
But to share a little bit about the environment that you came from.
So for me, I come from South Florida, Palm Beach. I had one of my uncles that did massive time in the prison system. He was one of the guy is a major drug dealer in Fort Myers. So I come from an environment where I think all kids want to do well.
Yeah.
But you go to the options that are around you to do well.
Yeah.
So that means if you would have put me in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. I probably could have created Microsoft.
Yes.
Because I don't have no other choice but to use my ingenuity on building computers.
Yeah.
But if I'm intelligent and you put me in the streets, I'm going to get involved with that activity because that's the only thing that I know. Mm-hmm. So for me coming up, well, anything you could, I always tell everybody, we all have the same hood story. Mm-hmm. Anything you could think of that kids were doing in the hood, I did it, right? Yeah. But I've always been intelligent enough to know that this is just part of the journey. This is not where I'm going to end up. I've always wanted more of where I'm at.
But how did you get out? Like, how did you make that step to get out of that environment?
I would truly say, man, the teachers, seeing that I'm intelligent, they knew that I was bored. And they're like, you just need to challenge yourself more. So I started taking harder classes in high school. But if I'm really being honest, it was nothing more than that lawyer's fancy suit.
Wow.
It was changed my life. Wow. Because before then, I'm looking at a Mustang 5.0 Vanilla Ice is rapping about.
Yeah.
And everyone that has that is a drug dealer in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So seeing someone in a fancy suit with a Rolex on, what I saw in my neighborhood, but he did it another way.
Yeah.
And he told me I didn't have to change. I said, what? He says, I'm an attorney. I still have the same friends. They respect me for who I am, but I'm my own man.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't know that was possible. You know, when you come from the environment, the peer pressure makes you think it's only the one way you could do it. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to come in and when people act like it's a big eureka, no, I'm going to be honest. I saw a nice suit.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a nice car. And I said, how did you do that? Right? So for me, when he showed me another way of doing it, I said, look, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I went to my guidance counselor. I had like a 2.2 at the time.
Wow.
She said, if you want to go to college, you're not going to get in there with that 2.2. She's like, you need to go get you some honors classes so you can get a higher GPA. And I really just grinded, graduated with a 3.3 and got into UCF.
Wow.
With my mindset, I'm going to get that fancy suit. I'm going to get that Rolex. I got to get it.
I know.
So that was my motivation. Yeah. And my whole way through undergrad in law school, I presented them with the element of a street-minded individual, right? Mm. Even in law school, I used to go in there with my big gold chain on.
Really?
I didn't stand up and do my briefs. My chain's sitting in the desk. Clink, clink, clink. One of my teachers, she used to call me Young Jeezy. Silky and Jeezy, right? Making fun of me. Because I thought I was going to go to law school. We're going to open up a record label. I'm out of here. We're going to make money.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to leave the element. Music was my only still attached to the street. Mm-hmm. So I'm in law school. If I do music, I can still be with my boys. We can still figure out a way to make it happen. But so many things happened. Some more boys went to jail. Some more boys got killed in the streets, stuff like that. So I was literally left by myself to say, well, you got this bar card. What are you going to do now? Mm-hmm. And I just kind of pivoted. So I got to really become an attorney.
Yeah.
Because this is all I got.
Yeah.
I got to do well here so I can have the freedom to be who I want to be.
Wow.
And that's really what did it. That's really what did it.
That's inspiring. And it's crazy what you said about your environment. Right, where you look at your environment and you see success out of your environment, but what are the options?
Correct.
So like for me growing in Jamaica, the options were sports.
Yes.
Or the streets.
Correct.
Or a teacher. I feel like it was like one of the three.
Right.
You know, and both my parents were teachers.
Yes.
Right, but they said, hey, you are not going to be a teacher. We paved this way, so it's going to be sports.
Yes.
And for the longest, I always saw myself as I'm going to make it through sports.
Yes.
And then when I came to that door where I was like, well, sports is not going to give me the life that I envisioned, then I was like, well, I have to pivot to something else, some of my other tools.
Right.
Which came back to education from my parents. Right. And that's how I went to do my master's and go to law school. But
yes.
I feel like even now, a lot of athletes, big problem that athletes face is they get stuck on that vision of the success from being an athlete.
Correct.
Then they haven't realized that the tools of becoming a successful athlete can transition into success, into any type of business.
100%.
It's all transferable.
Yes.
But it's the environment of seeing the different plays, the different options.
Correct.
And it doesn't stop at the street. It doesn't stop at the spikes or the cleats.
Correct.
You can transition out of that.
Correct.
And I mean, I love that you and I are here to share from the athlete side, from the street side, that, hey, it's all transferable. You can use that same drive and that same hustle.
Correct.
To get to your 7-8 figure life, whatever your vision is, it doesn't have to be stuck as to what your environment showed you.
See, I want to ask you this question. When you talk to a high-performing entrepreneur, mm-hmm. whether white, black, Spanish, mm-hmm. isn't it crazy how much things you have in common?
Yes.
No matter where you came from?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Right? Your story may be, man, I had to work hard to be an athlete. Man, I was in the streets. I had nothing. Man, I had to take over my dad's company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same thing. Struggles, right?
Yeah.
The same fears of not knowing if you're going to make it or not. So the drive is always there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing I think we have to share to people that come from the same background we got.
Yeah.
Your drive is there, but you got to change your environment.
Exactly.
Because the environment opens the mind.
Yes.
So if you have a closed mind and you really start having a scarcity mindset
mm-hmm.
where you think I can only do this.
Yeah.
That's what creates the issue of you trapping yourself into that world.
Yeah.
You got to think, I need to travel more. I need to talk to more people. I need to keep escaping mm-hmm. my current circumstance to know where my next opportunity is going to come from.
Yeah. And I mean, like, even though you're still chasing more knowledge, you're still chasing the next level, the next environment. Yeah.
You know, I went to this mastermind and this lady said something that was very powerful. You can't say how to do something you're currently doing. And what she meant by that is when you're making your first six figures, you can't say how to make seven because you're in it.
Exactly.
Until you make the seven, then you say, let me tell you how I made it.
Yeah.
But the human mind is always, how do I figure this out? You don't figure it out. You just keep working and giving yourself more opportunities. So that's really what I want to share is, the work brings clarity, so take action. When you take massive action, you're going to have more options to make and more decisions from there.
Very, very true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just to circle back on one point that you made about all of the great entrepreneurs, they have the same tools, the same drive. I mean, it may be on a different scale,
right?
But it's the same tool. And this blew my mind. So I have a friend that I ran in college with, but his family was very wealthy, right? And his struggle, I mean, he came to me and he was talking to me on the brink of depression,
mm-hmm.
saying that, hey, you know, he is struggling with proving to his parents that he is worthy or talented enough to take over the company. Correct. Mind you, he's already making seven figures.
Correct.
But he is... like in tears saying that, man, they don't trust me. But he had to find a way to prove his value as to why he should take over a $300 million company.
Correct.
But I mean, we had to struggle with the street or sports. Like, yo, how are we going to flip this? How are we going to get to that next level? But it's all the same intangibles.
Correct.
And it's all transferable.
Correct.
You know, so we can't, I mean... hate on the person who you say, man, they were handed this. They still had to prove themselves to get to that next level. You know?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't say it enough to my athletes out there because I see some of them competing not only in track, football, basketball, to well in their 30s, holding on to that vision. And the door has already closed. It's already passed. But, I mean... yo, just believe, man. I mean, everything that you learned growing up, everything that you learned competing to win, to be in that top 1%, it is transferable to business. It is transferable to the next phase of your life. You just have to be intentional in your planning, intentional in the network that you have, the people that you partner with, and the people that you use to grow your mind. You have to be intentional about it to elevate from transferring yourself from being an athlete to the next world. You can't keep on holding on when that window is closed, or you're going to stay closed with it.
That is a fact. And the biggest thing is nothing grows without you growing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard thing for a lot of people to accept, but all it is a pivot, right? if you've already done these things at a high level, now you're looking at another stage where you can keep the same intangibles, mm-hmm. but now you have a new challenge of learning something new.
Yeah.
So the same way you wasn't a A-plus athlete out of the gate, you didn't come out of the womb running, being one of the fastest track stars. You had to put work behind it.
Yeah.
Now you have to get off the field and join a new field and put that same work and energy behind it. Thanks. And that's all it is.
Yeah. So Skinner, so you gave us your three H's.
Yes.
Right? What is your three pillars? And it may sound cliche, but what's your three pillars to success?
I would say three pillars for success. One is definitely going to be family. Something that gives you meaning, something that gives you safety to allow you to be vulnerable. So I think family is very important. Having that legacy mindset of what you're doing, you may not reap it today, but knowing that you're actually putting in the seeds to bear fruit for someone in the future. That could be family from immediate, family from community. Mm-hmm. But a community has to be part of the pillar. Mm. Because with a community, you have opportunity.
Yes.
So that's the first thing. Family, community. I would say another thing is mindset.
Yeah.
Mindset is the difference of thinking you're disadvantaged to thinking your disadvantage is an advantage.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is you may be in a disadvantage, but you may have a strength because of that disadvantage that others don't have.
Yep.
Right? Someone that comes from nothing knows what the bottom feels like. So when someone has the fear of the bottom, you don't have the same fear.
Yeah.
So you're willing to take more risk than others are.
Yeah.
Right? So I would say mindset is definitely the other pillar. And then my last one would be, for sure, just sharing information and being open and seeking to contribute before you take, being a giver.
Mm. The service mindset.
The service mindset.
Yeah.
The looking at things from a standpoint of how can I help you before I think about how it helps me. Because building your circle and helping others always comes back.
Yeah.
It may not come from that person directly, but some way, somehow the universe puts it together that it always comes back.
I like it. That's deep. You said something that really stood out to me is you may have a disadvantage, but if you don't harness it, you won't ever know that it's actually an advantage.
Correct.
Or down the road, it turns out to be an advantage.
Correct.
Like for me, growing up, I had a bad stutter.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like really, really bad stutter. So I used to be the kid who, anytime I was called on to read in class, man, the palms got sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
My heart is beating, but it forced me to actually think properly as to everything I wanted to say because I don't know if it's going to come out.
Right.
So, I mean,
it was, made you sharper.
Yeah. So, right. Like, no, even in court or if I'm going to explain a strategy. No, it's natural for me where I'm working everything in my mind to really be articulate and intentional in everything I say.
Yes.
And I still get the sweaty.
Of course.
The sweaty fingers and the palpitations.
But it's coming out smooth and
exactly.
organized.
Exactly. Yeah. And back then that was a disadvantage because kids used to laugh at me.
Of course.
You know, the stutters, I think.
Yes.
But I got over that. But that disadvantage now turns into... That disadvantage no turns into a solid advantage.
And then I would say the biggest thing to think about that too, think about the confidence that you got from that.
Yeah.
That self-confidence becomes a shield for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So for every episode, we like to pay homage. You know, we like to crown individuals or a group of people that they are unsung heroes in the community. That's why we have the Crown Me Now podcast. So for this episode, we wanted to crown all the coaches and teachers out there who they don't get the recognition for showing up every day, for being parents, for being mentors, and actually giving, breathing life into athletes, students. I mean, your teacher did it for you.
Yes.
My coaches did it for me. And I mean, I was thankful that one of my coaches was my father. So, crown me. Cheers to all the teachers and all the coaches out there in the junior system, high school, prep school, primary school, really putting that time in for the future.
Crown.
So, an amazing episode with Attorney Skinner, Lewis. Make sure you take some notes. Make sure you watch this one again. I mean, even me, myself, leaving here feeling inspired by this man. So, check it out. Crown Me Now Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen,